This is episode 7 of Store and Forward, a podcast about the past and future of amateur radio. I'm K Savitz, K6KJN, and I'm here with my friend
Steve Stroh, NHGNJ, and I am the editor of the Zero Retries newsletter about the future and the cool stuff in amateur radio.
And I am the curator of the Digital Library of Amateur Radio and Communication, a project of the Internet Archive, which is about the past and cool stuff of amateur radio.
Yes, lots of cool stuff and growing all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got some interesting, exciting new stuff that I've added that I'm excited to tell you about.
Great. So I've been heads down in the last couple of weeks, so we're catching up on this podcast, and I've had my head down on the attempted takeover of the 902 to 928 megahertz band here in the U.S. by a company called NextNav, and they basically want to carve it up into three parts: a low part for them, a middle part for everybody else, and another chunk at the top end of the band. They would pull us back to everybody but them would be pulled back to 11 megahertz in the middle of the band, and from a 26 megahertz band to a 11 megahertz band, just everything would stop working. And I was astonished at the number of applications that are that the band is used for. The one I had no idea about was that all of those electronic tolling systems that you just debit you as you roll through a toll.
How many billions of dollars have been invested in those by just the infrastructure, and plus just like people probably have to buy them for their cars, or rent them or whatever. I mean, so many millions of those are out there, and they would just stop working.
There are billions of these things that they're this same technology, a radio frequency ID. Basically, you transmit a signal, it excites a small circuit, and the circuit gathers enough energy for a very brief data burst of just a unique ID. And that same technology is the same technology that's used in warehouses. It's used in monitoring the movement of containers, all of this stuff. And every bit of that would stop working because it has a particular chunk of spectrum that it's identified for. It's hard-coded for that.
It's because this company wants to make another GPS clone, basically a backup of global positioning system. I mean, that's what they have in mind.
They want to basically be able to do terrestrial based navigation instead of satellite navigation with very high power transmitters, and essentially as a backup. And that's what they're hanging their argument on, is that they offer the only credible, in their words, credible system to do this terrestrial based positioning, navigation, and timing, PNT. And there, as many commenters pointed out, that's not the case at all. There's a newer version of digital television, ATSC 3.0, which has a navigate PNT component to its transmissions. And that's as every transmitter eventually upgrades to ATSC 3.0, that's just going to be in there, and it's going to be a free utility. There's the cellular industry noticed that there is this need, especially for horizontal positioning. Where are you in a high-rise building? They're getting better at that. So their argument is specious, I think, and totally advantageous. And then one of the most egregious things was that they said, well, we're in the 10 megahertz that we're reserving for transmit, we're not actually going to use all of that. We don't need all of that. But we can resell it to, because that makes more 5G spectrum. Mm-hmm. So
they want to be given something from the FCC that then they can go sell at a large profit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Hmm. And they haven't done any of the research that they claim that they have done. So at the moment, there was, when the FCC granted these licenses 20 years ago to them, They specified that the transmission, that these high power transmissions cannot disturb the balance of uses in the 902 to 928 megahertz band, of which amateur radio is just one. We are a licensed service. We are behind, let's see, industrial use is the very first primary application, then government navigation using this band, which sometimes means radars. Third is this PNT function. And NextNav is not the only company. It's just the one that's making the most noise right now. And then amateur radio is the fourth. And then the unlicensed uses, the Part 15 uses, like navigation tags and meter reading. Every blanking meter that transmits on 902 to 928 would have to be replaced. And the entire infrastructure, you know, that relays all this stuff. And, you know, in metro areas, there's one of these relay units of every 1,000 feet or so on power poles. You know, it's just the amount of stuff that this would screw up would just be staggering. And I suspect that is going to carry the most weight in the end. I don't know, but they make a claim and the FCC works in mysterious ways. You know, they've made questionable decisions before. But the other saving grace is that they're a government agency and there is ample standing for lots of entities to sue the bejesus out of the FCC for not paying attention to X, Y, and Z. And and the way that the rules are right now, they can't do what they want to do. So they're requesting this change, and it's up to the FCC to say, yes, we understand and we agree with your proposed changes, or no, we do not agree with your proposed changes and we are not going to change things. So there were, I forget how many, 400? It was in the thousands. I don't remember how. So I don't remember how many there were, but there were a lot. And I quickly started having to triage. I couldn't possibly, as an individual, and on the timeline that the FCC had, could read any appreciable chunk of comments. And there were a lot.
Every comment I looked at, though, was people saying, no, but don't do this. This is a terrible idea for various reasons. Some were meshtastic, some were, you know, ham radio, some were other things, but... Yeah. So,
well, I think the one that's going to surprise the FCC is the meshtastic folks. Mm-hmm. They came out of nowhere, and I doubt that the meshtastic users were visible to the FCC at all. And a lot of them made some credible arguments about using meshtastic on 902 to 928 as an emergency communication system. Mm-hmm. And I pointed out that there is. You know, the FCC has carved out chunks of spectrum for citizen use, such as the citizens band down at 27 megahertz. The GMRS band, UHF, family radio service. They don't have the equivalent for data. There is no, you know, and they specifically prohibit data on those other bands, on those chunks of spectrum. So there is no way for somebody to do personal data use, you know, in a neighborhood, et cetera, except on 902 to 928 because it's license exempt. And it's a really good band, unlike 2.4 gigahertz, punches through trees, goes long distances, you know, has a reasonable chunk of spectrum. So it's a really unique band and a really unique ecosystem. And everybody has, until NextNav came along, everybody basically said, looked at the rules and said, okay, can live with that. Go forward. Including amateur radio, which could have, you know, can make a stink if it wanted to. It's chosen not to. They put repeaters at the edges of the band where they don't get interfered with as much. And live and let live. And until these big bullies came in. So that's what's been consuming me, that pretty much for the last month.
But I mean, really, anyone can go to the FCC and ask for anything, right? I mean, they're not going to give it to you. But I mean, I could go to the FCC and fill out some paperwork and say I want an entire band of my Clear Channel to myself to have a 24/7 all the world around radio show about chocolate chip cookies, right? And I mean, and
yes.
So just because you ask doesn't mean you're going to get.
Yeah, as long as you file, as long as you have the process, do the process. The FCC is in charged, is charged with making the best use of the electromagnetic spectrum that is usable. And they're, you know, and something an advisor keeps reminding me of is that nobody can buy spectrum that's allocated by the FCC. It can allocate it and it can deallocate it. And it has. And the licensing and the auctions that you think you're buying spectrum, you're not. You're basically signaling that you are the most serious person of a list of competitors. And it's a Byzantine system that doesn't make sense to most people. And it wasn't designed to. It's a unique creature of Washington, D.C. The spectrum regulators in other countries are much more, you know, straightforward and less influenced by politics. But yes, you're right. You can petition. It's called a petition for consideration or something like that. There is a formal process, and individuals have used it over time. There was a guy that wanted to carve off a chunk of the 6 megahertz band. 6 meter band for a digital service for essentially a digital citizens band. Didn't go anywhere, but it does happen periodically, and it happens more than you'd realize with amateur radio, and it just gets completely dismissed with prejudice, and so they slink away. So
I cannot talk now because my dogs are barking. I have to deal with that.
So let's see. Mistastic. Yeah, 26. Oh, another one that I enjoyed reading about that I didn't know about was a home automation technology called Z-Wave. And Z-Wave is not just a home technology system. It's a industrial control system. It's apparently that robust. And one company's filings mentioned that an awful lot of lighting systems in commercial buildings, including high-rises, is controlled by Z-Wave. You know, that way you can you basically don't have to wire things. You can just turn them all off, turn them all on, turn some of them off, selectively, et cetera, et cetera. And they said, if you make us do this, I mean, this stuff is buried into buildings, to go out and, clean out all this, these literally billions of devices. Now, I wasn't sure if it was billions, but it could be tens, could be hundreds of billions of things. If you think about the average RFID tag that gets put into a book, and none of those things will work anymore in the presence of a high power transmitter. They'll just get, they won't be able to hear the reply right from the tiny little tag.
Yeah.
So,
wild.
So,
more will be revealed, I'm sure.
Oh, well, yeah. They could easily take a year or two and there's no way to hurry them along. They will take their time. That they want to take, and the comments process is required by their, the rules that they operate under, but the time to consider, there is no clock now. It's completely up to them and their particular agenda. So let's see. I had a interesting discovery this week, thanks to a Zero Retries, a friend, mm-hmm. He's not actually a Zero Retries reader, a system called SDR Television. And yeah. So
is this the thing where people were seeing signals that leaked through cable systems, but from other cable systems?
So this is a guy who has been working on a project now for years called SDR Console. And it's an application, it's a Windows application that just is essentially an omnibus system for doing all kinds of radio things with an SDR device, a software-defined radio device. And what blew me away was that it's just a software load that sends to one of these little units, even one of the smallest ones, the SDR, RTL SDL dongles that you can buy on Amazon.
Yeah, I have one of those. It's the size of a USB stick, and I've lost it because it's so tiny.
Yeah. So so those were originally designed as television receivers in Europe because a television was taxed, but a laptop was not. And if you plug a radio receiver into a laptop, you can watch television free.
Right, right.
Yeah. So that's why they created it. And then somebody figured out along the way that this was actually a wideband receiver, and it was sending what's called I and Q signals into the laptop, and then you did all the processing on the laptop because you had all that lovely processing power sitting there doing nothing. So this guy is kind of taking that back to its roots and creating a software-defined version of amateur television receiving. So there is amateur television going out over the QO100 geosynchronous amateur radio payload that hangs above Africa, which means all of Europe, all of Africa, most of Asia, et cetera. And so you can now watch all this stuff with none of the usual. You can watch the video being transmitted over QO100 with none of the complicated customized hardware necessary that used to be thought of as necessary for doing amateur television.
This is slow scan, or I assume it's
slow. This is full. Oh, wow. Yeah, that's exactly your surprise is exactly yeah, my reaction. Yeah. So yes, it's full motion video, full color. I don't know what the frame rate is. It's reasonable. I'll be featuring this in Zero Retries this Friday. And I just love, you know, and the other thing I was doing this week was I was wading back into the arcane rules of the Part 97 regulations for amateur radio, which exquisitely describes what's allowed in which chunks of, you know, the amateur radio spectrum. And here this thing is, you know, it's like, we don't care what frequency you use, you know, you need this much, and then you can do X, Y, and Z, and X, Y, and Z, you know, infinite combinations. And so video is just another stream of bits now, finally. And so we're in this very weird space where, you know, we've got these old regulations bogging down these new capabilities. So just for example, and one of the things I'm going to mention, Zero Retries, is that every large amateur radio group in a metro area ought to be putting up now a amateur TV repeater, because this particular technology enables us to be in the video business on amateur radio spectrum. We could be sharing, you know, amateur radio video content 24/7, as long as there is a control operator and there is a, you know, and you know, it's a communication, and we are allowed to do bulletins, you know, unattended bulletins. So all of a sudden, we're now at the sweet spot of this generation, which is they love to consume their content by video. We can do video. We can do video in software. We can do video with a $20 RTL SDL dongle and a Raspberry Pi, and you know, you just and then an antenna that can receive a 440 repeater, which, you know, is saturation coverage in a downtown core if you get the right spot. So, you know, that's what Zero Retries is all about, is me being surprised by stuff and then just glowing about, you know, all these different kinds of applications. And you
know, that sounds like fun. Yeah. Neat.
So what's new with DLARC?
Let me show you what's new at DLARC. I remember last time I was talking about the problem box.
Oh yes, the problem box.
Yeah. So the problem box has been dealt with. This is the content. This is part of the contents of the problem box. Did I talk about the teenager who with the shortwave stuff? I don't remember if I told you that story.
No.
So. This is so good. This kid named Chuck Vesey, when he was in high school in 1984 to 1986, he was listening to his little Uniden CR201 radio, and he was listening to shortwave stations all over the world, and he was obsessed with shortwave, and he started writing away to all the stations he heard and asking for broadcast schedules and QSL cards and QSL pennants and things. And for 2 years, he got them and he saved them all and he put them into a box and, you know, he read it all and then he saved it all. And eventually he sent them to the Digital Library of Amateur Radio and Communications, and we have scanned it all, and now we have these mid to late 80 broadcast schedules and QSL cards and things from all over the world. Radio Vatican, Republic of Venezuela, the Swiss Radio International, UAE, and Radio Kiev, and Radio Ukraine, Korea, and he just sent, you know, he kept out, and then he might go back 3 or 4 months later and ask again and get a new schedule. So he accidentally created this amazing archive of this moment in time in shortwave listening. Let me find. So this is one of my favorite things. There were so many QSL cards, I just had to throw them into an item called Various Shortwave QSL Cards Collected by Chuck Vesey. So, we've got QSL cards from Radio Japan.
Oh, that's a nice view. Oh, I see. Yeah. Very nice.
And Brussels and Radio Praha. I'm sorry, I don't know where that is. And this looks like Super Rock Station KYOI, which looks like something coming out of like California or something, but it was from Saipan. We got, you know, France. So just this amazing collection of stuff that Mr. Vesey sent us. And I had such a good time looking through the physical materials, and as I was doing the metadata, look at that card for Radio Sweden. Isn't that just gorgeous?
Yeah.
I just love the graphic design on that. So we've got all that. And then I think I showed off some of these to you when I was still, he had these QSL.
Oh yeah. The banners.
Pennants, banners, I've heard of QSL cards, of course. I was not familiar before this project of QSL pennants, which are little flags, little small triangular shaped little flags that some radio stations would send out. Got one from Radio Beijing, I took pity on the scanning center in Fort Wayne, which did not know what to do with these, and I just scanned them myself on my home scanner. It's 600 dpi, so. Anyway,
they're gorgeous.
They're neat. It's such a neat collection. It's just and just created by a kid because he was into listening to his little radio for a while, and then he got out of that. He got out of the hobby, but he saved the stuff and
So he doesn't seem to be an amateur. So how did he find out about DLARC? How did it come to you?
I believe he is a librarian, so he must have heard about it through library things. Yeah. I don't think he it was a thing he did for a while. Now he's not into radio anymore. You know, he.
Yeah.
And yeah, but anyway, it's an amazing thing. I'm going to write a blog post about it, and it's just, you know, and some of the stations sent little, you know, guidebooks to tourism, you know, come visit our country, and little newspapers and stuff, and it's incredible. It's just such a great. It's such a great collection. So this is now available in DLARC. And the other thing I wanted to tell you about that we just added is the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a newsletter about DXing published by this guy, Ted Margolotta, KB8NW. He published this newsletter for 31 years, beginning in 1991. And it went to 2022. And newsletter about what's going on in DX world and you know, different countries that are you know, have an unusual DX that was available, and you know, different contests and things, and he publishes a newsletter every week. And so most of them were available on two websites, you know, in HTML format, and they were out there, and they were kind of, you know, it was two websites, and he said I could put them in DLARC. So I collected them from the websites, and I got everything into one space and converted everything to PDF, so it was easier to read. And then I got them online, and that was fine. And then we didn't have the first like 232 issues, which were not online. They had never been online. He had distributed them via packet BBSs.
Where I remember this from now. Yes.
And I think probably they got onto actual modem BBSs, and they were sent out, you know, by a packet clusters, and that's how they were distributed. They had never been on the internet. And so it's like, I want these, Ted. Can we find the first 230 odd issues? And you know, he went to the stack of hard drives that in the back of the closet, you know, the 30-year-old hard drives, and he found it. He found them, and it was like on a Windows 3.1 hard drive or something, which he couldn't read on his modern system. But then he had a weather station attached to his house somewhere that's still using an old, it was Windows 95 or something, and it could read it. So he managed to get the data off of these 30-year-old hard drives, and he sent me text files of the first whatever it was, couple hundred issues. And then I had to process those to turn them from giant individual, you know, text files covering a whole year into individual issues. Anyway, they're all online, and so for the first time literally ever, every issue of this newsletter is available on the internet, full text searchable, and the whole 31 years of this passion project from KB8NW.
That's very cool.
Yeah. And the other thing I keep telling, okay, and I also talked in the past about going to Fair Radio Sales and getting 200 boxes of stuff from them. And one box I asked the scanning center to prioritize, and it was the box of Fair Radio Sales catalogs.
Mm-hmm.
And they have all been scanned now. We have 76 issues of this catalog spanning, I think the earliest one is 1970, and it going all the way up to 2011 or something.
Seeing that big logo in the upper left corner just brings me back. I I vividly remember sitting, I would get the fair catalog in the mail, and I would then, I would bring it to school with me the next day because I had a regular study hall, and I would just browse through it, you know, and like the stuff that, and, you know, and we take it so for granted now that, you know, we have all this computing power that we can throw at, you know, communications tasks. But back in the day, you had to do it with hardware. You know, I mean, my God. And the incredible amount of unique hardware. And so, and then, you know, as soon as there was the transition from tubes to transistors, everything started getting replaced. So stuff started coming out of service, and they would just throw this stuff on pallets and auction it off by the pallet load. And fair said, yeah, we'll take it, you know, and not even pennies on the dollar, you know, for the, what the stuff originally costs.
Yeah. You need a radar jammer. You can get one, an unused radar jammer for $20 in 1970.
That was another thing that they were famous for. They're just beloved, is that all of the titles were from the, you know, they used Dymo, you know, labeling tape, embossed labeling tape for their titling. It's just
In addition to it was so much radio stuff. I mean, that was their bread and butter. But there'll be like, you know, laser discs and laser disc players, rather, you know, all sorts of TV stuff, you know, UHF, VHS stuff, and battery things, battery testers, you know, anything the military would need in order to make radios work in the field. Mm-hmm. So anyway. So these are online. This is the first batch of stuff from Fair Radio, and they're there to enjoy.
So did you ever hear back from your contact there about how it went?
Yeah, he said it went okay. He auctioned some stuff off. He still had more to get rid of to vacate the space, and so I don't think he had a. I don't know if he had a plan for that or not, but he didn't sell off as much as he needed to. But then he found another box of old different catalogs that he's going to send to us to scan.
Oh, well. Sweet. So,
yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. So any exciting plans for the weekend?
Well, let's see. I'm getting ready. Well, I'm getting ready for Portland Retro Gaming Expo. I guess that's this weekend. We have a bunch of friends coming from out of town, like old computer nerd, vintage computer people coming out of town. And I'm giving a talk on Saturday as part of a panel. And I'm going to volunteer to help set up for the show on Thursday and Friday, and then participate Saturday and Sunday. So, what about me? That's me. What about you?
I was actually thinking about coming down to Portland and visiting our daughter for the PGE, but we are now parents of two kittens, so that's taking a while to get sorted out. They were both feral, and they haven't had their shots, so my daughter does not want them mingling with their cats until they've been through the full cycle of vaccinations, et cetera. Sure. So we're just going to stay home and enjoy the kittens.
Nice.
They're named Shrekie and Fiona. They're great. And they're not even brothers and sisters. They're, you know, there was a mismatch set, but they figured each other out. So
that's great.
Yeah. So that's our plan for the weekend. And with that, I'm going to have to wind it up. I have a medical appointment to go to.
All right. Well, good talking to you.
Yeah, thanks. And we'll do this again soon.
Sure. This has been Store and Forward, your podcast about the past and future of amateur radio. I am Kay Savitz, K6KGN, curator of the Digital Library of Amateur Radio and Communications, which I want you to check out, please. Google Digital Library of Amateur Radio and Communications. You will find us. It is an incredible amount of material about ham radio that you can spend an just a long time, a long, long, long time exploring. And I think you will find something interesting.
Absolutely. I second Kay's suggestion to go check out DLARC. And it's an amazing resource. And it's something that we didn't know we needed until we had it. And thank you for being the genius behind the scenes of getting all of that stuff sorted and organized and et cetera. And I am Steve Stroh, NAGNJ. I am the editor of the Zero Retries newsletter about the cool stuff in amateur radio, data communications, microwave space. Zero Retries publishes every Friday at 15:30 Pacific, and it is free, as in beer, to subscribe. So check it out at www.zero.org, and make sure that your browser doesn't change retries to retires.
Why don't you just buy Zero Retires?
You're right.
Redirect good. It.
Yeah, that's true. Good point. That's why you're a pseudo staffer, Kay. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. So, talk to you next week.
It just cost you $7. Talk to you later.
Bye.